Peter B. Collins Show rolls on. While I'm on vacation, I've left you in the capable hands of Brad Friedman from bradblog.com. Once again, his Bradness.
We've secretly replaced the White House press corps with actual reporters.
From your lips to God's ears, John Stewart.
I'm a gonna raise a fuss, I'm a gonna raise a holler.
Raising a fuss and a holler here on the Peter B. Collins Show. Two more big hours ahead of us. Margie Burns, speaking of replacing the White House press corps. Bradblog's D.C. correspondent Margie Burns will be here with us shortly. Talk about her new report over at bradblog.com on the history of the phrase compassionate conservative. Also trying to keep an eye on the bradblog.com chat room going over there. The top item that talks about today's show, you can hit comments and you can jump into the discussion going on over there. Where Agent 99 is mining the store and says, yes, lock them together, punishment of the first order. She wants to throw Myers and Myers and Bolton into the jail cell that we now know is in the Capitol building in the basement. I have confirmed that with a high-ranking aide, we'll just say, in the U.S. House. And Spector, in fact, Arlen Spector, Republican, even referred to it himself yesterday. So let's see here. What else do I have to do before we get to a call? Oh, yes, give us a call. 888-888. That's 888-5. Peter B., 888-573-8372. And what other business do I have? Is that it? Margie Burns, Larissa Alexandrovna coming up next half hour. Let's take a quick call here from Patrick in Portland. Oh, Patrick, welcome to the PBC show.
Hey, how's it going?
It's going all right. What's up, my friend?
One way to end the Republican Party forever would be to push the truth about 9/11 into the mainstream. And yet the Democrats don't seem to want to talk about these truly impeachable crimes.
And why do you think that is, Patrick?
Well, all the evidence is out that the Bush administration orchestrated 9/11. All people have to do is read the books of David Ray Griffin. And if I might share some of the evidence, some of these so-called 19 suicide hijackers are still alive. One even gave an interview with a London newspaper. And
Have you seen what's the London newspaper that interviewed one of the 9/11 hijackers?
It was an Arabic one. It was an Arabic daily. And he was speaking from his home in Morocco, and he said, you have no idea what it feels like to see your face on television.
And has anybody else confirmed that report other than this one Arabic newspaper out of London?
I think he gave several interviews, and there's been seven of them so far that have turned up alive.
Seven of them, but in no event has any more than one paper. Look, and I don't mean to be... Well, I do mean to be skeptical, because that is my job, frankly, to be skeptical, and I'm skeptical by nature. No video of these guys, I presume, and no more than a single source has said that any one of these folks are alive, correct?
As far as I know, there's no video. That would be a good idea. But moreover, there were no Arab names on any of the flight lists for that day, and that's just one problem with the official account.
Well, there are a lot of problems with the official account, and while I'm not necessarily one of these 9/11 truthers, I do appreciate the folks who are trying to go out there, get the story straight. I've seen, you know, a lot of back and forth. Often, unfortunately, stuff is single sourced. It would be good if we could get, good hard data on this stuff. But look, I know what you guys are up against because I've been up against it with the election reform business, and people want to disregard stuff that they don't like to hear.
That's why the books of David Ray Griffin are so great, because he puts it all together. Footnotes. He's so scholarly. He's written 20 books on theology as well. And this is the truly impeachable offense.
Fair enough. Okay, thanks for the call, Patrick. I appreciate it. And look, I want to get to a... where are we here? If I can get to this video here really quick. Speaking of impeachable offenses, unbelievable. This is a story from yesterday's Gonzalez testimony that has been underreported as far as I'm concerned. Let me see if I can fit this in. It's Sheldon Whitehouse of Rhode Island asking about a memo from May of 2006 where they seem to have signed in the vice president's office to have permission to look at any and all DOJ investigations. It's a little hard to hear, but I think it's worth it. Give this a try here.
I then showed you the letter that Attorney General, the memorandum that Attorney General Ashcroft prepared. And that's the document that sort of kicked open the door from seven to hundreds of people to be involved and have discussions about ongoing criminal civil investigative matters. And that's what led to action about all of this. Now, you've had some time to think about this. You've indicated a desire to clean up the mess at the department. I would like to bring to your attention a May 4th, 2006 memorandum that is a subsequent document to the Ashcroft memorandum. This one is signed by you. If you don't mind, could you ask, give him a copy and put up the...
They're putting up some documents here from this memo signed by Alberto Gonzalez in May of 2006.
Here's what concerns me. In the Ashcroft memorandum, which was the subject of concern before, at the very, very end of the Ashcroft memorandum, as you'll remember, there was that paragraph under asterisks that changes the whole memorandum in front of it. It says, notwithstanding any procedures or limitations set forth above, the Attorney General may communicate directly with the President, Vice President, Counsel to the President, Assistant to the President for National Security Affairs, and various others. And then it provides who the staff members can consult with. Directly with officials and staff of the Office of the President, Office of the Vice President, Office of the Counsel to the President, National Security Council, and so forth. Now, I took the position that that was pretty much kicking down a very important door that had protected the department from political influence. But I see in your May 4th, 2006 memorandum a number of things that concern me even more. The first is at the bottom of the first page where there is an asterisk footnote, which says at the bottom, for convenience, the executive functions of the vice presidency are referred to in this document as the Office of the Vice President, or OVP, and the provisions of this memorandum that apply with respect to communications with the EOP, Executive Office of the President, I assume that is, will apply in parallel fashion to communications with the Office of the Vice President. Let me ask you first, what on earth business does the Office of the Vice President have in the internal workings of the Department of Justice with respect to criminal investigations, civil investigations, and ongoing matters?
As a gentleman, I would say that's a good question.
Why is it here, then?
I'd have to go back and look at this.
I'd like to know where this came from and how that addition was made. And then if you look at the very back, the very last paragraph, once again, there's a final paragraph set off by asterisks that pretty much undercuts everything that was said in the previous enumerated paragraphs. And here, you can see the difference. It's almost identical with the previous memorandum, only it adds some things. Notwithstanding any procedure or limitation set forth above, the Attorney General may communicate directly with the President, Vice President, so far same as the Ashcroft Memorandum. Then you add their Chiefs of Staff, Counsel to the President. Then you add, or Vice President. Somebody took the trouble to write in Counsel to the Vice President and provide that individual access to ongoing criminal investigations, ongoing civil investigations, and ongoing other investigative matters.
I don't know whether or not that in fact it's happened. So I want to emphasize
part of what
that.
We do around here is to prevent things from happening.
Exactly.
And
exactly.
When you kick down doors, you invite people to do it, whether or not it's been done.
And I agree.
Well, there you go. That's an incredible statement. Basically, what they're saying is that the Office of the Vice President, his attorneys, have been
have been allowed access by Gonzalez himself, allowed access into criminal investigations of the Department of Justice. May of 2006. What was going on May of 2006? Investigation into Scooter Libby. Investigation into Dick Cheney. And the disclosure, for the first time in the history of this nation, by our own government, the name of a covert CIA operative. The vice president and his attorneys had access to what was going on at the Department of Justice in that investigation and in many others. Gonzalez, of course, had no explanation, acted like he didn't even realize it was there. Just incredible. Where's it all going to go? Anybody's guess at this point. All right. You're listening to the Peter B. Collins Show. We're going to be back in a moment with Margie Burns, DC's Brad Bloggs, DC correspondent. And we got much more ahead. Stay tuned.
The Grove Market in Pacific Grove is ideal for all of your grovery shopping. Locally owned and operated for 37 years by the Higuera family, the Grove Market boasts the finest selections of just-picked conventional and organic produce our Central Coast farms have to offer. The Grove Market's full-service meat department specializes in the highest quality, choice, fresh-cut, and prepared meats. Local artisanal bakeries deliver breads and other delectable baked goods hot from the oven every morning. To perfect your gourmet home-cooked meal, choose from the Grove Market's outstanding selection of Monterey wines. The Grove Market features competitive prices, personalized service, and home delivery in PG and New Monterey. You can't go wrong at the Grove Market. So shop Monday through Saturday from 8 to 7 and 9 to 6 on Sundays in downtown Pacific Grove, 242 Forest Avenue, just above Lighthouse. The Grove Market, where the locals shop. Do you wish your dentist listened to you? Dr. Daniel Turner has been practicing dentistry in Monterey for 33 years, and he specializes in listening to his patients. For Dr. Daniel Turner, the most important aspect of good dentistry takes place long before you open your mouth. Dr. Turner interviews every new patient so that he'll understand what is important to you. And because Dr. Turner cares about you and your concerns and feelings, he provides outstanding care for your teeth. Dr. Turner's caring attitude and professional manner extend to his entire staff. Karen, Sally, Christy, and Nikki are always courteous and efficient. So if you're looking for a Monterey dentist who listens and who cares, call Dr. Daniel Turner at 375-1112. That's 831-375-1112. Dr. Turner's office is conveniently located at 815 Cass Street, downtown Monterey. Parking is free and plentiful. So for all your dental needs, call Dr. Daniel Turner at 375-1112. He listens. He cares.
Everyone wants to know a great hairstylist, and I want to share mine with you. Dallas and Ashley at Malibu by the Sea, 2024 Del Monte Avenue in Monterey. Malibu by the Sea is a full-service salon and bronzing spa. You can slip in for a tan and then have them create a stunning look for you. They perform cuts, color, multidimensional highlights, and the highest quality of human hair extensions. Dallas and Ashley, simply the best, making you look your best. Call them at 383-0807. That's 383-0807.
Concerned about the steady increase in home mortgage interest rates? Don't panic or overreact. Now is the time to analyze the many available options and to choose the best possible course. Leverage the equity in your home to reduce or eliminate high interest and non-deductible debt. Victor Munoz, president of Creative Mortgage, invites you for a free consultation in his Salinas offices at 201 John Street. To schedule your free Creative Mortgage consultation, call Victor at 757-0436 right now. That's 757-0436.
There we go, folks. Okay, let's take a little traffic here. On a Wednesday afternoon, a little hump day traffic for you folks. Monterey, northbound 101, just before Highway 183. Heads up for rather, they're actually calling this a huge brown box. So this box is in the left lane, and vehicles are trying to swerve around it at this point. So CHP being called out to the scene there to try to deal with that situation. Also want to take a look at crash, Monterey, southbound 101 at San Miguel Canyon Road. Looks like a vehicle into the center divide actually went up in the air and then landed, possibly almost, they thought it flipped over. It did not, but anyways, another vehicle involved. So they're calling that a two-car crash at this point. That's brought to you by Luxor Las Vegas, your great big...
We're back here on the Peter B. Collins Show. Brad Friedman in for PBC, who is out for the rest of the week and next week. But much more PBC show to come anyway while he's over across the pond enjoying a much-deserved vacation family reunion. We've got Margie Burns on the line, BradBlog.com's D.C. correspondent. She's been sitting in on House and Senate hearings. And, of course, today she's got a really, really fascinating story that you can read up, an exclusive, if you will, over at BradBlog.com, letting us know that George W. Bush did not invent the phrase compassionate conservative, and it's got a very interesting root that Margie Burns has been digging in the libraries and may have discovered. Oh, Margie, welcome to the Peter B. Collins Show.
Well, thank you.
Very interesting story you've got here today.
Thank you.
Yes. I mean, this took some real digging. And how did you, first give us the headline here. This compassionate conservative, George Bush is not the first one to call himself that, is he?
Well, no, but that's kind of not the best way to put it, because I don't think the late Pope called himself that either.
That's true.
When
good point.
He died, that people honored him with that tribute, or at
right.
least the New York Times writer did. That was back in 1978, and it was Pope Paul VI when he died. Of course, it was a big event, and reported on the front page of the New York Times, and there's a photograph of him posted in the blog on Brad Blog, as you know.
August 7, 1978, in the covering the death of the Pope, big photograph.
Yes. Yeah. And the caption reads, "Compassionate conservative."
Now, how does this tie to George W. Bush? What gives you the impression that the Bush team may have gotten their slogan from this story?
Well, I know they did. But it wasn't from the New York Times itself, of course. You have to go to a reference book, the New York Times obits. You know, for years and years, the New York Times obituaries. I mean, it's a big deal if, you know, when you die, you get your obituary into the New York Times, and then an even bigger deal if the obit gets saved in hardbound, or at least the hardbound copies that they, you know, hardbound volumes that they,
because they have,
put together.
They put out a special index, obit index,
yes,
every few years?
Exactly, exactly.
Okay.
Every decade, I think, or at least that's the way it was. So this is the one for that decade. And during the same decade, one of George Bush's relatives passed away. It was George Herbert Walker, Jr., son of George Herbert Walker of golf and sailing and baseball fame, and father of George Herbert Walker III, who was appointed by Bush as ambassador to, I think, Hungary. I've forgotten sort of at the moment. But anyway, so, you know, you go through the index, and there's Walker's name, and it's quite clear that these people were doing a little bit of anticipatory research. You know, this is, after all, leading up to the campaign, 2000 election campaign.
Right.
About a year and a half before the campaign really flared out into the open, I would say. Well, anyway, late 90s, 98 or so. So these people are, you know, White House personnel, Rove or whoever it is that does his work. I mean, the people known for attention to this kind of detail. And they've got to check out, you know, what might be said by opponents about George Bush's relatives or liabilities or whatever. So this is where you find it.
And so you're suggesting that the team, the Oppo research team, would have gone back and started looking into his own family history see what their opposition would try to find on the Bushes at that point.
Oh, absolutely. Well, my take, you know, more broadly, and setting aside just the, I mean, you know, the very fact that this phrase is used when it is so clearly untrue. I mean, when Mr. Bush, candidate Bush, Governor Bush of Texas, was running for the White House as a compassionate conservative. I mean, the most solid plank in his very short political career platform was that he had executed more people in Texas than any other governor had. I mean, you know, there were virtually no pardons. There was virtually no clemency. I mean, he just practically went out of his way to, you know, he executed people even when, as, you know, luck would have it, the Pope asked him not to. So, I mean, the very fact that they could adopt a label like this that had been used about a man like the late Pope Paul VI, you know, is kind of like a, I mean,
of course,
it pretty much says it all, but they were definitely doing anticipatory research.
And we spoke to Mary Mapes yesterday, formerly of CBS News, was talking about the 150 death warrants that George Bush signed as governor. Anything but a compassionate conservative. But how? And we've only got a minute or two left here. How did you happen to start digging into this story and find that George Bush's uncle, I guess, was listed very near to this obit for for Pope Paul the IV, listing him as a compassionate conservative? How'd you find that in the library?
Well, I just picked up the right book.
Were you looking for this story?
You do the bibliography. You know, you go through the bibliographies. You find, you know, look at the biographical indexes. If you're looking up a particular relative, like, you know, like the Walker family, for example, you can find lists of where they're, you know, where the information, what books, what published books, the information.
But you didn't find this
published in.
But you didn't find this online, Margie. You found this in the hardbound library. What were you actually going back and looking for when you came across this?
Well, I must have been looking up the Walker. I must have been.
Any reason you were looking up Walker?
Well, of course. I mean, you know, absolutely. It was the older Walkers. Actually, before I answer this, you know, my take on the bigger picture here is that basically what Team Bush did in 1997, 98, 99 is they pretty much did what we call OPPO research, opposition research on America. That's what they did. They pretty much did opposition research about America, about the United States, you know, probing for soft spots, looking for weaknesses, searching out possible communications gaps.
And we've only got about 20 seconds, Margie. I'm sorry.
Pockets of unawareness, that kind of thing. Yeah, and right. This is part of it.
Well, I'll tell you, it's a very interesting report. It's interesting to see those pages, and nice to see someone who has found something not on Google, but actually the hard way, using a shoe leather. Go check out this report by Margie Burns over at bradblog.com. Margie, thanks for all you're doing out there and keeping an eye on those hearings. I got to get a vacation sometime, so please jump in all you can. All right?
All right. Okay. Bye.
Thanks, Margie Burns, D.C. correspondent from bradblog.com. We're back with Larissa Alexandrovna right after this.
Progressive Talk for the Monterey Bay Area. This is KRXA 540, Carmel Valley, Monterey, Salinas, and Santa Cruz. Think for yourself.
The Osgood File. Sponsored in part by Franklin Templeton Investments, providing a unique perspective to investors for over 50 years. Franklin Templeton Investments, gain from their perspective. I'm Charles Osgood. The Federal Appeals Court has thrown out a decision made in 2005 by the Bush administration to allow long-haul truckers to drive 11 hours straight instead of the 10 hours they'd been limited to for 60 years before that.
This is really a welcome decision by all of us that have been working in the area of truck safety.
More after this.
Ever run out of ink at the wrong time? Office Depot has the solution. Office Depot ink and toner is always low priced, guaranteed. Office Depot has over 500 choices in store and thousands more online, including our own Office Depot brand, which will save you 10%. Plus, get $3 off your next in-store purchase for each empty ink and toner cartridge you bring in, up to 25 per day. Office Depot, taking care of business. Selections vary by location. See store for details.
If you're into eBay or just want to make an unbelievable amount of money selling stuff on the internet, then grab a pen to write down a number that could change your life forever.
So far I've done 100,000 in gross sales.
Generate massive cash selling products you don't have to see, store, or even pay for. Everything you need to get started making money on the internet is on a free CD from Internet Speedway. Call 1-800-390-3011. 1-800-390-3011. 1-800-390-3011.
The U.S. Court of Appeals in its decision yesterday said the Federal Motor Carrier Safety Administration had not adequately explained its reasoning as to why it would be safer for truck drivers to drive their heavy trucks for 11 hours rather than 10, the old limit. Jackie Gillen is Vice President of Advocates for Highway and Auto Safety.
We're very pleased with the decision because it's going to put safety first and trucking industry profits behind that.
The American Trucker Association asked the court to stay its decision, and it won't go into effect until September 14th. The ATA likes the 11-hour limit, says it has reduced driver fatigue. Sounds as if they think the longer you drive a big, heavy piece of machinery, the less fatigued you are. The court couldn't understand that, and neither can Jackie Gillen.
Fatigue is a major problem in the trucking industry, and yet this administration has put forth a rule that increases the number of hours that a truck driver can spend behind the wheel.
The case has been argued for 2 years now by groups including not only Gillen's, but by Public Citizens, Parents Against Tired Truckers, and the Teamsters. As for the administration?
We are hopeful that they have gotten the message from the courts and from the safety community that this rule is unsafe and dangerous for all Americans on our highways.
Transcripts, MP3s, and podcasts of The Osgood File can be found at theosgoodfile.com.
Doesn't it seem that the service is lacking at most service stations? Well, not at the Karma Shell at Rio Road and the Valero at Mid-Karma Valley Shopping Center. We take care of our customers. Karma Shell is happy to pump your gas and check under your hood at your request for no extra charge. At Mid-Karma Valley Valero, we offer expert car repair at reasonable rates with a fast turnaround. We do tune-ups, brakes, safety checks, and a 26-point inspection with an oil change. We specialize in Lexus and Toyota. Our mechanic is ASE certified. Call us at 624-0722. That's 624-0722. Karma Shell at Rio Road and Mid-Karma Valley Valero, putting the service back in service stations.
Four, three, two.
It's the Peter B. Collins Show, and your humble host is away. But the show must go on. And now, from Houston, here's more from Brad Friedman of BradBlog.com.
Living on a prayer, halfway there. That can only mean we are halfway through this week's Peter B. Collins Show. The exact halfway point. Hump day. Hump hour on hump day here on the PBC show. Sitting in for Peter B., we've got Larissa Alexandrovna standing by momentarily from rawstory.com. If you want to talk to her, now's the chance. Dial it up. 888-5-PETER-B. That's 888-573-8372. I know there's Larissa fans out there. As a matter of fact, let's see, here over in the bradblog.com chat room, where I hope you will join us, GWN from Canada says, oh, I hope to get to hear Larissa Alexandrovna. She's my favorite writer-journalist. Thanks, Brad, for all the great guests. Well, we can do better than that, GWN. You can talk to her yourself if you wish. I think Barbara also has some questions for Larissa that we will try to get to in a moment. Post it over at the chat room. Anything else? All right, that's it. 888-5-PETER-B. All right, let's go on over to Larissa from Ross Story, our old friend. Oh, Larissa, how are you this afternoon?
I'm good. Hi, Brad.
Are you at an undisclosed location?
Yeah, it's called home.
Oh, well, where is your home in an undisclosed location?
Publicly, it is, as is yours, I imagine.
Yeah. Well, I've left.
Yeah,
I've left my home.
I figured.
We packed up. We're on the road. We've got a big trailer. We're never going back.
Well, that sounds good.
Yeah. Anyway, so you got a story, boy, oh boy, over at Raw Story today. National intelligence estimate lacks supporting evidence, possibly, Larissa, politicized, say, intelligence officers. Of course, my tendency was to be sarcastic there and say, possibly politicized. Are you kidding me?
we would expect nothing less. What's going on here? How is this? How is the NIE politicized this time, according to the intelligence officials?
Well, there's one portion of it that appears to be politicized with regard to what you folks covered last week,
mm-hmm.
in terms of Pakistan being an issue. And everyone's in agreement on that. But the main concern about the NIE is that it was badly put together. There was very little evidence to support the assertions made. And in particular, there was some concern over the idea that the Lebanese terrorist group Hezbollah would attack domestically if they perceived, that's the actual wording, that Iran was being threatened.
And, I was going to say, so Hezbollah tied to Iran, the report essentially seems to be sending the message, which would be counter to what the administration, I think, would want to get out there. They're saying, if you attack Iran, you may be facing attacks at the homeland from Hezbollah. Is that essentially what the NIE was trying to say?
Well, who knows what the NIE was trying to say?
Okay. Well,
there is some speculation as to, you know, it's the idea of a perceived threat, and you know, some of the people I talk to are genuinely concerned that this administration is not deterred by any disagreement on whether or not they should attack Iran. And that they might indeed provoke an attack, they might provoke a seeming first attack from Iran. And mm-hmm. this kind of argument sort of, and this is in some people's view, this is, you know, by no matter, you know, the consensus as mm-hmm. the NIE claims to be, that they might use this assertion later to say, okay, you know, see, Hezbollah felt that Iran was threatened, that's why Iran, let's say, attacked U.S. troops Hezbollah attacked U.S. troops in Iraq, and therefore now we must retaliate.
So,
you know, I mean, it's like setting the table in advance.
A peremptory strike, if you will, or peremptory intelligence, I suppose.
Well, exactly. At this point, we're not no longer into preemptive strikes, we're into preemptive intelligence. That's you put it well. The other possibility, which some of the folks I talked to have said,
yeah.
is, and I think probably the more likely one, is that, you know, it's quite possible that not only did the Department of Justice get all sorts of Monica Goodling-type people stuck in there for their loyalty, not their abilities.
Loyal Bushies.
Right. You have the intelligence agencies being staffed with similar types of people who do not know a darn thing, and who are only there because of their allegiance to the leader. And if that's the case, and certainly there's no way to find that out because you would have to know all of their identities, and that's not going to happen. But if that's the case, then, you know, that is very dangerous. And if, you know, my understanding of the report is that it's poorly sourced in terms of when you make assertions, it's like writing a term paper. You have reasons for why you came to the conclusion you came to. Here are here's the evidence, here are the footnotes, here's the information to back up what I'm saying, type
uh-huh.
of thing. And that it was very poorly sourced all throughout, and that it was incredibly sloppy in its language. And so with that last part was across the board no matter who I talked to, and to me that is why I think the latter interpretation, that is, that the intelligence agencies are now, you know, being polluted with
yeah.
Monica Goodlings.
And so are they essentially, is the point here or the hope here, according to your sources, to really begin to fan the flames? If they mention Iran in the NIE, it puts Iran on the map. It puts it into discussion. It puts
right.
it, into Charles Krauthammer and Fox News and all of these guys. More evidence that, Iran, we got to go against them next. Is that the general assertion here from these sources?
Well, no. It's not like Hezbollah isn't a threat abroad. They are, and they are a terrorist group, or they have been in the past.
No, but to shoehorn, in other words,
yeah,
to shoehorn
no, no,
Iran
in. I hear what you're saying, but
vis-a-vis.
I just wanted to put that out there.
Okay.
But there are different reasons why the sources are, as you say, you know, putting this out to get ahead, and why they're questioning why this was inserted. As I said, some, you know, believe it's the preemptive intelligence. Some mm-hmm. believe it's Monica Goodling type of intelligence, and there's a small faction who think, as you do, that this could be, or as you said, did you say? How did you explain it? Say it again. I lost.
It seems like we're sort of stitching together these ideas. Oh, Hezbollah is supported by Iran. If we attack Iran, then Hezbollah will attack us, and that since the information itself in the NIE is so very sketchy, and one of your sources even says it seems to be from, you know, information back in the 80s or something, it's almost as if they're putting Iran out there any way they can so that the media, the right-wing neocon media, you know, picks up on it, starts talking about Iran again, and essentially beating the drums, you know, paving the way for what they want to do, which is, of course,
well, right. That sort of jives with the first interpretation I gave you, and that is that, for example, if, you know, they want to make this Iran attack happen, or Iran, you know, war,
mm-hmm.
but they can't be seen as being preemptive about it. So let's say there's somehow a huge, big attack on U.S. installations abroad somewhere, right?
Right.
They can say, well, you see, Hezbollah felt that Iran was being threatened, and now they've attacked us first. Now we have to respond. You see what I mean?
I do. And you have... Yeah, go ahead.
But, and of course, this being, you know, it's not like we're talking about a group that's unknown. Hezbollah is a known terrorist group. The reality, though, is that they've never attacked us domestically, and they've had ample opportunities. As Robert Baer points out, and you know, he went on the record, and you know, he said they could have all this time attacked us if they wanted to.
Yeah, former
during more.
You've got former CIA case officer Robert Baer says Hezbollah had all the opportunity and motivation to attack the U.S. during the last 24 years. Why in God's name would Hezbollah resort to terrorism against the West when it got what it wanted? You'll know there's a Hezbollah domestic threat when the FBI makes a serious arrest in relation to a terrorist plot. Well, he's talking about Hezbollah getting what they wanted where? By this war in Iraq?
In Iraq,
at this point?
Yep. Because it's really devalued the U.S.-Israeli position in many ways, and it's with regard to the Middle East and such. And it's also unified it's unified moderates with radicals
mm-hmm.
In terms of their views on the Israeli-Palestine conflict. And also it's made a lot of the international, you know, public outpouring of support for Iran happen when that wouldn't have, you know, before that wouldn't have been something that was conceivable, where
mm-hmm.
you would think Iran was being, you know, seen as the good guys type of thing. So in that regard, yes, they got what they wanted. They also got a very nice defeat of Israel, if you recall, last year,
yeah.
Which, you know, all of this is very frightening because, indeed, they are empowered. But they've never attacked us domestically. And
mm-hmm.
and that is, I think, the point of contention here. Well, if you'll also note in the article, Dr. Norton, who's the leading U.S. expert on Hezbollah, Professor Norton from Boston University,
mm-hmm.
You know, his thing is like, okay, great, sure, you know, we could sit around and basically conceive of every possible threat, but let's not, you know, drop the ball. Let's focus on the real threat, that is the instability in Pakistan, you know, and this is where all experts, whether they're scholarly, whether they're officials or officers, they all agree Pakistan is a serious problem. Of course, one created by the Reagan administration, the problem, that is, the seriousness of it.
Mm-hmm.
Pakistan is a serious problem, as is Saudi Arabia. Although I couldn't get anyone to tell me if Saudi Arabia was in the classified report.
Well, you know, we spoke with Larry Johnson, and we're going to take a quick break here shortly. But and so give us a call, by the way, if you want to talk to Larissa. This is your chance, 888-5-PETER-B. We spoke with Larry Johnson, who I know you know, former CIA analyst. And, you know, in trying to make sense of these things now, it has become next to impossible. And even for a guy like Larry Johnson, who knows this stuff so well, who has worked on these national intelligence estimates before, you can't any longer take them at face value for, you know, here is the cold, hard facts. You sort
well,
of have to build in the politicization.
To a lot of people.
Yeah.
Is that the you don't know who to you can't trust the Justice Department, you can't trust intelligence, you just there's no trust for any government agency or whether you know no matter what you think of it. The fact is that an intelligence estimate should be clean and it should be trustworthy.
Those days are over. Larissa Alexandrovna, hang on, stand by. Larissa from RawStory.com. Going to take a quick break here. Come back with Laird from Eureka and anyone else who wants to get in, if we have time for you. 888-573-8372. I'm Brad Friedman on the Peter B. Collins Show. Back in a moment.
We were looking for an inclusive community, so we joined a Unitarian Universalist church where we can really live our values.
Did you know the American Red Cross, the League of Women Voters, the ACLU, and the SPCA were all founded by Unitarians or Universalists?
Imagine a denomination that walks its talk. When Martin Luther King Jr. appealed to clergy to join protesters at Selma, Alabama, more than one-third of the Unitarian Universalist parish ministers answered his call.
And Unitarian Universalists are still fighting for justice today. We're speaking up everywhere for marriage equality, for reproductive rights, for the environment, and for our civil liberties.
A denomination with progressive values makes a difference in today's world. Unitarian Universalists. Come visit our church on the Monterey Peninsula at 490 Aguajito Road at the top of Carmel Hill. Visit our website, uucmp.org, or call 624-7404.
The healthcare system is broken. That doesn't mean you have to be. Capitola Physical Therapy helps you return to the level of function you need with skilled personal attention. Whether it's golf, tennis, walking, or simply getting out of bed and maintaining your balance, Capitola Physical Therapy understands, cares, and knows how to help. Call Capitola Physical Therapy at 475-1200. That's 475-1200.
Welcome to your solar future. Saturdays at noon on KRXA 540 AM. Your solar future is about the practical, the passion, and the politics of going solar. Listen to Your Solar Future, Saturdays at high noon. Go to YourSolarFuture.com. See the solar videos sent in by folks like you. Save thousands of dollars. Make money as well. You'll see when you go to YourSolarFuture.com.
All right, let's take a look at traffic and let you know that we have a major problem working still. It was a SIG alert, which indicates, again, a major problem in Santa Cruz Mountains, northbound 17 after the summit. It was a crash and an earlier truck fire. It's been cleared. Now, here's the problem. The traffic really backed up. Northbound traffic backed up from the summit. Southbound traffic is clearly backed up all the way from Highway 85 if you're traveling in that area. Now, also, CHP telling us about a couple new problems. It's a crash in Monterey, southbound 101 at San Miguel Canyon Road. And this is a vehicle hit the center divide, went up in the air, and apparently landed back on its wheels. Also, another vehicle involved in this crash as well. And a tow truck is on scene along with CHP. Cienega Road at Highway 25 in Hollister. We have an accident working there. This report brought to you by Kaiser Permanente.
Come on.
us. Give us a call, 888-5-PETER-B, if you want to talk to Larissa Alexandrovna of Raw Story or me, your friendly citizen blogger turned radio guest host here on the PBC show for just a few more days. We're talking with Larissa about her new story over at rawstory.com, a very impressive investigative report on the national intelligence estimate and the claims that Iran, the threat from Iran is perhaps unsupported, according to sources in the CIA. But let's take a quick call here from Laird, who has a question for Larissa, but Salsa says he's... you're angry at me, Laird? What did I do?
I'm not angry at you, but I definitely felt like I got cut off the other day.
You did?
Anyway,
yeah.
That was yesterday.
Oh, okay. So today's a new day, I will cut you off anew today. You can be mad at me all over again.
Okay.
Look, I'm making this up as I go along. You know, I got to figure out the clock. I got to do all that kind of stuff. So don't be mad at me in advance. That's my preemptive intelligence for you.
Okay.
Okay. What's your question, Laird?
Quick comment.
Yeah.
This sounds to me like part of the Cheney 1% solution. I don't know if you know about that.
What's the Cheney 1% solution?
That if there is a 1% chance of an attack, we treat it as if it's an absolute certainty.
Ah, that's right.
Okay.
I have heard that.
That's the comment. The question, and I'll take my answer off the air.
So I don't have to cut you off, sir?
Right.
Okay. Very good. Go ahead.
Is it possible, does Larissa think that it's possible that this is a lead-up to some kind of an emergency preemptive attack? I mean, is this kind of thing possibly something Bush could use to turn this into an emergency?
Okay.
Do you understand the question?
No, I don't. An emergency in what sense?
In the sense that he would have to enact the national presidential emergency directive.
I see. Okay. I know what you're talking about.
Okay,
I'll
take the answer off the air. Thank you.
You're going to hang up on yourself, sir?
Well, if you don't, you know, you want me to stay around.
That would be fine. Go ahead. Hang up
on
yourself. Bye, Laird. Okay. What do you think, Larissa?
I think there's been a lot of talk lately about comments made by, I forget his name. He was with the Reagan administration, and he recently wrote...
Paul Craig Roberts?
Yes, exactly. Thank you. Saying that, in a year we'll be a dictatorship at war with Iran.
And he advocated impeachment to avoid that very recently in a column.
The problem is when you've got something as secretive as intelligence to begin with,
mm-hmm.
and then you've got such a secretive government that's so abused intelligence in the past, it's the entire nation becomes paranoid to the point where that paranoia, can arguably be said to be a reasonable response to unreasonable circumstances. Could he use this as a power grab? In other words, stage something, I think is the question.
Right.
I don't know. I can't predict the future. I don't know. Would he? I don't think so. Not because I think he's a good guy, in other words, anybody in this administration.
Right.
But because I just don't think that to pull something like that off, they would have the necessary support within the military or within any other branch of government. Let's not forget that this administration, the reason we have all these leaks, the reason all this stuff is coming out is because there are people who stayed on board in this administration so that they could leak this stuff out.
They could get this stuff out. Well,
right.
Steve from Salinas has a thought about how they might escalate it from here. Let's see if we can fit this in real quickly. Steve, question for Larissa.
On the same thing,
yeah.
Last week on Tom Hartman's program, Paul Craig Roberts and Bruce Fein, both of who were in the Reagan administration,
right.
said they are expecting some sort of a 9/11 event before the elections in order to solidify the Republicans' chances, and I think also to give Bush a reason.
And, right, I mean, it's not inconceivable. It's not.
I don't think there's any level below which Rove and Cheney will not few months to do.
True, and if you look at history in Germany in the 1930s, I mean, we are absolutely following that playbook. But the German regime put those efforts into place with the full support of the military, the full support of all these various government officials and whatnot. In this case, these guys are so disliked by
everyone,
the majority of the public, right, including the majority of the military.
Right.
They're disliked by intelligence officials. They're disliked by everybody. That I would find it hard to believe that they could muster up enough support from any group to pull off something like that, which would require a great deal of logistical support, for example. So while I don't think it's inconceivable, I don't think they can do it.
I don't think it would have to be on that scale. Just get a couple of people together to go into a supermarket or something. And
well, you know, you're right, Steve, and thanks for the call. I got to cut you off because we're coming up to the top of the hour. But, you know, I agree. In essence, look what they did with this attack in London at the Glasgow, Scotland. You know, it was, I don't even think anyone was killed, but they turned it into an around-the-clock event. He's right.
A single bomb set off somewhere. British authorities who told me that the press, on the record, by the way,
yeah,
told me that the press was making this hysterical when Gordon Brown himself is saying, look, there is no war on terror, we're not using that phrase anymore, and we don't know if this was Al-Qaeda, so stop using, you know, that term to every, you know, possible terrorist.
Well, right, but that's my point. A single, you know, somebody can go out, anybody can go out, set off a bomb in a shopping center. That's going to be 24/7 on Fox News and be more than enough. You don't need another 9/11 to give these guys what they need to pull the trigger at this point.
But let's say something does happen in the future.
Mm-hmm.
You've got a public that is so cynical. You've got a public that is so paranoid at this point that even if it were real as opposed to false flag,
mm-hmm,
they would still think it was false flag. That is how paranoid we've gotten.
That's how bad it's gotten.
Do you think the public would just simply say, okay, well, that's what it was?
You know what? I don't know. They fell for it before. They seem to keep falling for it, and I got to get out here. And I won't get to even Ben's question, who says the military won't go for it this time around.
No, they won't.
I hope Ben is right. Larissa Alexandrovna of RawStory.com, as ever, thank you for everything you do. It's always a joy to talk to you.
Thanks. Bye.
Back for more, our Election Integrity Hour, after this.